The day bison graced your village was the most important day of your life. But for me, it was Tuesday.
Welcome to 50% Fresh, where we cover your favorite movies based on video games based on movies. I'm Taylor.
Hey, and I'm Mark. I'm doing the math, and I think that checks out. We'll sort it all out by the end.
Well, Street Fighter.
You know, this is a short, we had a short list going in. This is a movie I wanted to do from the beginning, and we also talked about this probably, buckle up. Folks, this might be the first Van Damme episode, certainly not the last.
Yeah, we discussed if we should mention, it's probably a good idea to mention that we fully intend on doing, there will be more than one Van Damme movie we cover. We're not sure how
many at this point. This is the sound of my hands when we're talking about it, okay? Let's just,
as of yet, we have yet to come up with any sort of, like, cute little themed name for our Van Damme episodes, but, we won't force it. We'll wait.
It's that intersection of stuff we like and maybe someone whose movies don't get a lot of great reviews, you know. So it just lends itself to this.
I don't want to give anything major away if that's how we operate, but there are a few Van Damme movies that I've yet to see that I'm just interested in watching, but I know that they have to fall under our jurisdiction of 50% or worse on Rotten Tomatoes.
Of course. Yeah.
So it's like two birds, one stone.
Yeah. So with that, Street Fighter, today's movie is Street Fighter from 1994. We good to just go on then?
Yeah.
I think? Okay, cool.
Fight.
Hey. Great job.
they do that in Street Fighter.
I think.
We
some
didn't
variation.
Have that in the house. We had Mortal Kombat.
Some variation on it, yeah.
Whatever. Anyway.
So today's movie is Street Fighter from 1994. It came out, I think not Christmas Day, but like December 23rd of 1994. Based on the wildly popular video game, actually based on the wildly popular Street Fighter 2 video game. There was a Street Fighter that was, I don't think to this day I've ever played it.
When I think about Christmas, the first thing that comes to mind is Street Fighter.
Street Fighter,
so,
you know.
That's just...
You pile into the van.
That's perfect. But it was already a popular video game at the time. I was a little young for this when it came out, but so can you give me a little bit of context? A few of the actors or a few people, I should say, that worked on the movie were attracted to it because they knew it because, oh, my kid's obsessed.
Yeah,
with
it was one of those things. Yeah, like, I think it's a famous, like, little, like, you know, Bob Hoskins story about the Mario Brothers where it's like, I just thought it was some movie. And then my kids were like, what? You're Mario? The Mario? Like, I thought this was just a silly thing some screenwriter made up. Yeah. So Street Fighter 2, maybe 91, I want to say.
Was it an arcade game?
It was an arcade game. And what is, of course, you know, it's not news to anybody. And again, apologies for anyone this might be redundant to, but just like the arcade in the 80s and 90s, of course, everyone knows that there was this place called the arcade that used to go and play video games. But a thing that might be, that makes me think about Street Fighter 2, why it blew my mind, is because the arcade used to be this place you would go and the video games there were so much better than what you had at home. That doesn't really happen now. We have PS5s here, and if you find yourself at a barcade, it's not really that thing, but it was like, you know, they were like these games that were these big, huge, they fucking had motors in them. They ran on gasoline. I'm not sure. I don't think that's true, but no. So you'd go to the arcade and just see some game like, what is that? And so Street Fighter 2 was one I'd never seen. I'm sure fighting games existed, but I can't think of one I'd played before that where you pick from this whole cast of characters and fight your opponent to the death. It was just completely engaging. There was 8 different characters, and they were all different. They were all cool to play. All the levels were good. The graphics were so much better than anything. So yeah, it was just a huge hit. It was, I think Street Fighter, and there was this first wave kind of video game movies. Street Fighter and Mario Brothers hit the scene in the same year, or maybe a year apart. And I got to tell you, as a fan, as a huge fan of both video games and also just movies in general, even as a kid, you don't even think about it in these terms, but it was just like, I didn't really think we needed movies out of that shit, you know?
Yeah.
It doesn't lend itself to it the way that, like, maybe a comic book or some TV show or whatever.
It is often a little baffling when the video game movie comes out. And until recently, it was almost a guaranteed bomb on every level.
It was a rough batting average. And, you know, God bless whatever studios kept doing it. They were undeterred. And it was just like, no, Max Payne, do it. No, okay, Prince of Persia, do it. No, okay, Doom, do it. Okay, no, like just
on and on. Tomb Raider, didn't they?
A couple times. The last one might have halfway taken. I'm not all the way sure.
No, that's not a video game. Taken?
I was trying to think of something to do and you did it.
That's just Liam Neeson.
I should have said Tooked. Then you wouldn't have got me. But yeah, so with that, it's the, you know, it's this ensemble. And then so I said there's eight characters. And then about a year or so later, they put out Street Fighter II Turbo, which let you pick from the four boss characters you could fight were now selectable characters. After that was Super Street Fighter II, which brought the cast up to 16. And I do believe that's around the time now, 3 years later, 94, the third version of the game. That's kind of where the game was at when this movie came to, you know, start to be kicked around and made.
And so we're all here today discussing this because they had a video game to promote.
Ultimately, yeah. And Capcom, who makes a ton of games, Resident Evil, Mega Man, on and on and on, a million things in between. They were part financiers of the movie, so they had a lot of say, and that will come in time and time again. But a thing I really thought about is kind of an obvious thing, but it took me a while to realize that I just thought of it before recording, is that movies that have been turned into video games are generally pretty bad. They have that reputation, and it's often because they have a deadline they can't move, you know, and where games need to get polished or fixed or delayed or whatever, that can happen. But, oh, if we need to come out the same day the Polar Express comes out, our shitty Game Boy Advance game or whatever needs to come out that day, it is what it is. They had that with this movie based on the video game, so it kind of went the other way. And so that factored into some other problems they had where, boy, they could have used some more time.
And it shows a little bit. We had writer-director Steven D'Souza, who at that point had made a name for himself with some action movies, right?
Yeah, it's interesting that he was like kind of the, if you want to say one pivotal action screenwriter of the 80s, he wrote Die Hard, Die Hard 2, not from the 80s, 48 Hours, The Running Man, Commando, wrote all these movies, a huge, huge, huge screenwriter. This was his first movie as a writer-director. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting where I think he probably had some clout or whatever you want to call it as a screenwriter. But now it's time to be a director, obviously a whole new beast. And also this unique situation, you're answering to Capcom, not the studios. I mean, there is all of that, but then there also sounds like there was this other thing. So, you know, I don't know how much, and maybe he didn't have a lot of power to exert himself or something, but it sounds like that's a big, that dynamic formed a lot of the trouble. And then, you know, the other major part of the dynamic, our boy that we already talked about, gave the movie this idea because it's an ensemble thing. So as soon as you throw Jean-Claude Van Damme in as Guile, suddenly...
And for the uninitiated, suffice to say, they cast Jean-Claude Van Damme as Mr. All-America.
He is the... Yeah, it is...
A literal American flag tattoo on his arm.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Street Fighter 2 has an international cast of characters, and they are very international. It's, I think a Japanese sumo wrestler and a beast man from Brazil or Argentina or something like that. And then, yeah, so Guile is the American, one of two or three American representatives. Like, he is, his level that is probably modeled after Top Gun, I think. You know, there's, like, airplanes airplane people watching and doing, dressed in the fatigues or whatever. USA through and through.
Just take the hostages out. If I'm not topside in 15 minutes, evacuate without me.
So joining Van Damme in the principal cast, we have Raul Julia, Kylie Minogue, and a laundry list of character actors. So many people were familiar that I had to look up the IMDb a couple times just so I wasn't distracted. Why do I know this person?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like, oh, that's Duana Mann. Oh, that's Mulan.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Whatever. Yeah, Duana Mann, the voice of Mulan. I spotted a guy from the movie The Program, someone from the movie Necessary Roughness. A lot of character actors.
So it's one of those. It had a budget of $35 million. Most of that. Well, not most. A good portion of it.
Too much of that.
Too much of that went to Van Damme, and Raul Julia wasn't cheap either. So yeah. After that, they sort of had to, you know, get a bunch of grunt workers, I guess, to fill in the other roles.
Mm-hmm.
It ended up grossing over $100 million. So that's good.
Yeah,
I guess.
It sort of broke even domestically from what I saw. I think between that and just the critical drubbing it took, it has this reputation of maybe kind of like, you might think it was kind of more of a bomb than it truly was. Like, it was a profitable endeavor. It just was rough for all parties involved, including the viewers.
It currently sits at 11% on Rotten Tomatoes. This is the second worst movie we've covered on the show, with the worst still being Gotti at 0%.
Which can only ever be tied. Gotti will always be the worst reviewed movie we've watched for the show. It might have some company. But yeah, I think that tracks. I feel like Street Fighter is the second worst movie we've watched after Gotti.
I still think Basic Instinct's overall score is too kind.
It's yeah.
But you know, these things are fluid.
Yeah. If we agreed with it all, we wouldn't have a lot to talk about, I suppose, sure, or whatever the hell. Or I don't know.
Allegedly this movie has a plot. I'm going to need you to...
You'll see where I started this and then decided to finish it, we'll say. So the plot is Bison, General Bison, Raul Julia's character, the dictator of this country, or general, I guess, that's trying to become the dictator. Bison is a general in the Civil War ravaged country of Shadaloo. He has some hostages. The good guys need to come fight the bad guys.
That's really very... I could have told you more. Right, yeah. Could you, though?
I could try. I could tell you that all your favorite characters from Street Fighter 2 are there. Things have been made. Chun-Li is a TV reporter. I was not going to be able to pull a second one, so I'm glad you cut me off. Okay.
So you hear a lot of like jokes about certain movies being like, oh, these guys must have... How much coke were these guys on when they made this movie?
Yeah.
But I feel like this movie is the actual product that you end up with when it's drastically affected by cocaine.
Yeah.
And we'll get into what I mean, I suppose.
If Basic Instinct was a fuck picture, this might be a cocaine picture. Right?
Well, the fuck picture had a lot of...
That's on screen.
Then there's no drug use in the movie.
Yeah. So this is like a cocaine fueled...
In years since, we've learned and it's been discussed that JCVD had a pretty thorough cocaine habit at the time.
And he's been forthcoming about that, and only because it seems to have affected production so much will we be talking about it. But it's something to think about. What was it, the $8 million figure went to Van Damme, was a lot of the budget, yep. Knowing what we know now. One could say a lot of the Street Fighter budget was cocaine money.
Well, I have a quote from De Souza saying, I couldn't talk about it at the time, but I can now. Jean-Claude was coked out of his mind.
Okay. Yeah.
So, and there were times that he just sort of didn't show up when he was supposed to show up. And
yeah,
that could all just be like partying lifestyle stuff. Because at this point, he was also like, this Time Cop had come out. And so he was...
He's
one of the biggest,
high. Yeah.
He was at the beginning crest of his fame.
Which at the time you don't know.
Yeah.
You know, you're like, everything's going a little better every year. And it might have even for him for a year or so after this. But this is like close to like pulling in money on a movie that they didn't have the budget to pay him that much. But they just like Capcom, maybe you have some more on this. I don't know how much they wanted him specifically or just like a name. But I think I do recall reading that like they wanted that inexplicable call, right?
So, one of the biggest problems with the movie, the biggest distraction that I had, that I found impossible to get over, is that, again, Guile is supposed to be an American man, and the first thing he says, like his first line, I forget what it is, but Jean-Claude Van Damme is doing an American accent, and then it's just gone. It's gone. He's back to being just like full Tommy Wiseau Belgian... Whatever, I don't know.
But don't you want to speak to the world often?
No. But I do want to talk to someone.
That bastard Bison!
I know you like to look at yourself on television, you sick son of a bitch. So look at this.
So Capcom, they wanted a big action star as Guile.
Naturally.
But their $30 million budget stipulated that they couldn't afford Sylvester Stallone or Arnold Schwarzenegger. So when they Capcom suggested Jean-Claude Van Damme to play Mr. Johnny America, Steven DeSouza pointed out that there could be an issue with his accent. Capcom responded, "What accent?" They were unaware he had one because they're based in Japan and they had only just seen his movies dubbed in Japanese.
Dubbed movies.
So they didn't realize.
It could be Arnold, it could be Jackie Chan. Well, no, Jackie Chan might not be. But no, yeah, it could be Arnold, it could be Sly Stallone, it could be him because they're seeing the action and assuming the cadence is okay and that they sound
right
vaguely. Well, I mean, yeah, because maybe they didn't realize Arnold was foreign either, which is funny. but yeah, it's interesting. He fights it, you know, like most of his movies and I used to joke before about Arnold, like the power of Arnold's stature was that if he decided to do your script at the height of his powers, that character just became an Austrian character.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever's going on, this cop, this father that wants to buy a Christmas present, whatever, Austrian now. That's in there, you know. But this is the alternative to that.
Exactly. And you see why it was that, because it is tremendously distracting. And I didn't know when we watched the movie that this was full coke problem Van Damme. And so maybe he just forgot he was supposed to be American. Well, I don't know.
It goes in and out.
It is inexplicable. And it doesn't even... It doesn't go in and out so much as you hear his natural accent with like varying intensity.
The first
line is American accent, and then it's just, I don't know, like slurred. Yeah. And it does kind of add a little something to the interesting dialogue choices.
It adds a certain watchability, a certain what will happen next to it, you know.
Or just certain things he's supposed to deliver. This character is supposed to be delivering these words.
Rousing.
And they come out a different way.
He makes the big rousing speech because, again, it's a war. It's a, hey, the good guys. He makes the Bill Pullman Independence Day rousing mm-hmm. speech.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you know, so it's like a Belgian accent, I think, technically. But it sounds kind of like French, or we were talking about that he's often explained to be from the Bayou, Louisiana in his films because it's that, like, in that vague ballpark or whatever, you know. But he'll hit just like a phrase. Hopefully I can find some clip to drop in, you know, but... It'll just be this, like, musicality where it's just like, okay, we're going back to my own country. And there's like, wait, Guile, what was that? What was that? It's...
You forgot the oboes.
Well, I'm not going home. I'm going to get on my boat, and I'm going upriver, and I'm going to kick that son of a bitch Bison's ass so hard that the next Bison wannabe... He's gonna feel it.
So, also, I think you had something about how there even might have been one of those lines of dialogue that's like, oh yeah, him, he's from fucking, that's why he talks
like that. Yeah, you mentioned how in other Van Damme movies, to explain the way he sounds, they throw in a line of dialogue to explain that he's from Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
Because apparently people from Louisiana sound like they're from... I don't know.
I think off the top of my head, at least the movie Hard Target, I'm pretty sure, is one that is just... At least it's maybe just the best, you know, the best one.
So, DeSouza, in an interview, he said, like, we were going to do exactly that. Do what they do in a lot of Van Damme movies where they just add in that line of dialogue. But they... Cut it out of the movie.
Didn't make it.
It didn't make it. So just the editing process, somewhere along the way, they cut the line that was explicitly added to sort of explain this. But even if that did make it...
It's not great. No.
It is no explanation at all for the way he sounds.
We wouldn't have went, I have some laughter to retract. Because that's good. That's not what's going to happen.
Pretty bonkers.
Yeah.
$20 billion? What will prevent him from taking more hostages next month and asking for 50 billion, 100 billion?
So I haven't seen the movie since probably, you know, I don't know if I saw it opening night. So let's just say late 94, possibly early 95.
You saw this in the theater?
I saw it in the theater. And
you know, it's a long time ago. I have different, you know, some of these I remember more than others or whatever. And sometimes I remember sitting there and enjoying the movie. Or sometimes I remember kind of being excited about it afterwards. Street Fighter, I remember. This would have been one, I'm sure my mom kind of probably dropped my brother and I off or something and picked us up. I just remember riding home just kind of chewing on it. Just going like, you know, huh. You know, like it wasn't vile. It wasn't like so bad. I remember seeing Ninja Turtles 3 in the theater and was like, this is like a piece of shit. This is my first, like, I reject this movie. This is not good. Street Fighter, like I said, just kind of, what was that? You know, like what? Was that, that was, okay, that was the Street Fighter movie. It just felt weird. For one, there's no tournament. You know, the whole movie, and there's been a lot of kung fu movies that are just like predicated on a tournament. You get to do some Enter the Dragon type thing, and you're halfway there. If you want to do your own thing, that's fine. You know, like, you want to do more of a narrative, good guys, bad guys, real life, Civil War type thing. Yeah, I guess. It's just, it's really, yeah, it's flimsy.
That's really the problem, is that maybe the most recent Mortal Kombat movie was polarizing, but I enjoyed it because what I want out of that movie is just, like, a lot of absurd violence.
Yeah.
And lots of, like, fights between pairing different,
yeah,
characters.
Yeah.
And there is a shockingly low amount of any of that in this movie.
Yeah. Whereas I think the new Mortal Kombat, I think it caught some shit for kind of like never getting to said, like, where's the Mortal Kombat, right? It was I saw, and that's fair, but also it's like, well, I don't love it when people play the long game and like, well, we're making four movies here or something, but like, yeah, if it's like, okay, I do see where you set it up for, like, if Mortal Kombat 2 is like, hey, we're doing the tournament, I'm like, okay, that's a pretty good hook for a movie. So I get that. But like, yeah, but to your point, they also just find ways to have a lot of pairings off. So I could give a shit about the context if Scorpion and Sub-Zero are having a cool fight scene. I don't, you know what I mean? I don't need it to pretend to count in a fake tournament in the movie to necessarily enjoy it. But it's almost like this movie, Street Fighter, realizes at the end, like, oh, we haven't done a lot of that, you know? And so suddenly there's like a bunch of that when the movie should just be over.
At one point, and it really affects the pacing, because at one point we paused the movie to let the dogs out or go to the bathroom or whatever, mm-hmm, and I see that there's still like 40 or 50 minutes left. Like,
yeah.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
Like, well, I thought the ending just started.
Because like that speech I mentioned, I want to say he gives that speech about an hour into the hour and 50 minutes. So then it's like, okay, now it's an hour five and we're running into Bison's lab or, you know, lair. And it's it's the final action sequence, but that final action sequence also is suddenly like five different hand-to-hand combat fights simultaneously.
Pretty boring, generic fights too. Like, just, yeah, the action isn't good.
It's not good. It's not edited, shot well. It's laid out weird. And one thing too. So then you've only had an hour, and then it's all action from there on out. So in that hour, man, it's like whiplash because of how many characters are coming and going and, mm-hmm, and doing things. And I get it. You want to give all of them at least some kind of, if not full-blown arc, but like a little something to chew on or something. But that's a lot of fucking characters.
Well, it seems like it was Spice World effect a little bit. And by that, I mean that movie was rewritten on the fly to accommodate a lot of celebrity cameos that came up.
Yeah. Yeah.
As they went. Mm-hmm. And this movie, it was similar, but Capcom kept asking, like, oh, can you show this character more?
Yes.
Can you add a little thing for this character that's really popular in Japan?
Yeah. And that's where, yeah, it sounds like they kept going, hey, what about two more? Hey, how about two more and stuff? And
it's just too much.
I have a quote from DeSouza. He didn't want to use all 16 characters. Quote, there's a reason there's seven dwarves. There's a reason there's seven wonders of the world. There's a reason it's the Magnificent Seven, which is a remake of the Japanese movie The Seven Samurai. Seven is the number of characters an audience can keep in its head at any time. That's his little theory about that.
Seven. I can't whistle, but yeah. I was doing the Seinfeld movie. Yeah. Sorry.
Say also, DeSouza, not a fan of Ocean's 8. He went on to say, goddamn. By the way, a lot of things I am going to be mentioning, if I don't cite where it's from, I should just say that there's a really great Polygon article from 2014 called Street Fighter, the movie. What went wrong? So,
aww.
Yeah. And it's mostly like a lot, it's like oral history style. So, you know, a lot of these quotes and such are all just kind of coming from that same place.
I would be remiss, though, if I didn't specifically mention that Raul Julia elevates this material,
yeah,
to, he's way better than it is reasonable,
yeah,
to saying these lines. Like a lot of the humor of his character comes through just like the bravado that he's able to bring to his speech. I mean, we all, just what a great actor, man.
Great actor. We'll try to plow through the sad bits as quickly as we can. Sad bits, just this one. But he was sick when they made it. Sadly passed away by the film's premiere. I'll get into a little bit
it shortly here, how it affected the logistics of it. But you can, you know, obviously they shoot movies out of order. You see it sometimes more than others. He's just kind of, the poor guy looks, you know.
He looks unwell.
He's losing some weight and stuff like that. So that's too bad. Everyone on the set has nothing but nice things to say about him. Not only just about what a person he was, what a good person he was, but just no matter what was going on, his ability to get to life and still entertain and still perform and still be that person.
A consummate professional.
And when you... That's admirable no matter what, but when you see the level that he was able to perform at, regardless if it's in some cheesy movie based on a weird arcade game, sure, but like on an island, like his performance is objectively really great.
Mm-hmm. He was nominated for a Saturn Award.
It's remarkable, and if anything, it's like he's in a fucking piece of shit. And no one else, Van Damme, we can't even tell what hemisphere he's from. You know, Kylie Minogue, no disrespect. I don't know about her acting chops, and I don't know if Cammy was the best developed character in the script. There's just, you know what I mean? It's just like, he just shows up and is just doing it so hard.
Without Raul Julia, this movie wouldn't have, I don't know, it would have been a lot harder for everybody involved.
He makes the movie, he makes, you know, and I don't know what level is it scripted, was he helping on the ad-libs? I don't know what was going on, but like, he makes the movie, the whole thing rises, and it's like, he makes the dialogue good all of a sudden. Mm-hmm. And one thing we haven't discussed to get back into crapping on the movie, no, but just, it has this odd, like, every 10 minutes it'll do one little weird slapstick bit or something, you know? Do you remember that? Or maybe not even 10 minutes, but just like four times in the movie. I don't know, it wasn't enough to be consistent. It didn't belong in there, but that was the thing. But even once in a while, I was gonna say, Raul Julia makes that stuff even kind of work more than any of the other stuff.
Absolutely.
You know, like, just really, yeah, could do anything, it would appear, because he made this work. You know, when you say I'd watch someone read the phone book, like, oh, I'd watch someone play M. Bison in a bad Street Fighter movie.
Yeah, and that sort of communicated through the critics' consensus, which says, though it offers mild entertainment through campy one-liners and the overacting of the... Oh, overacting. I don't like that.
I didn't like that. Okay. I would just say acting there. Let's fix it.
They say overacting of the late Raul Julia. Let the record show, neither of us agree with that bullshit. No. Street Fighter's nonstop action sequences are not enough to make up for a predictable, uneven storyline. So that's their opinion. Rotten Tomatoes, that is. That is the issue, though, is just, like, inconsistent tone and just kind of, like, long, boring sequences. There was a scene that happened, and then afterward you asked me, like, why did we just watch... Oh, it was... They were passing... Four people passed a sword back... Or a gun back.
Yeah. Everyone had a gun, and they were just kind of passing it around.
A thing that we laugh about when we're watching bad movies is they always show, like, a car pull up to a house, and then people get out of the car and walk up to the door. It's, mm-hmm, like a sign, mm-hmm, of just, like, a poorly, poorly made movie.
Right.
So, at one point in Street Fighter, somebody gets a big gun out of a case, and then four characters pass it to each other.
Nice gun.
And that's it.
Turn out the gun.
That's the whole point.
Gun. Yeah, okay. Cool.
I don't know. Hour 50. Could have been a lot shorter.
Yeah. Can I tell an anecdote that is a great one, I think, about the hodgepodge? And I know exactly what scene they're talking about, too.
Yeah.
Van Damme's drug problem, how it affected the movie and all these characters. This is another one from the writer director De Souza. So what was happening was that frequently Jean-Claude was supposed to show up at 7 in the morning, and he wasn't there. He said he's sick. Actually, he was wiped, recovering from the night before. I would have to just make up some shit on the spot because I didn't have him. We'd invent some kind of fight involving Ken and Ryu and a security guard, but it was never rehearsed. It was made up on the spot. I was constantly pulling things out of my ass for the supporting players to do while Jean-Claude was playing hooky.
That's amazing. And it explains a lot.
And I had seen that before we watched the movie back. And I forget the larger context. They're all breaking out of Chateau jail or whatever. And it's like, oh yeah, because again, you have Van Damme. He's the star of your movie, right? Mm-hmm. And he's driving. He's up front. He's with Cammy, Kylie Minogue in the front. And they're up front. And they should be doing star of the movie. They should be fighting guys off, whatever Mel Gibson's doing in The Road Warrior or something. You know, you're steering and fighting people off. And then in the back of the truck, Ken and Ryu are fighting a security guard. And then, like, that should be, like, 50-50 or more Van Damme than anything. You watch it, it's, like, 80-20, Ken and Ryu. And once in a while, it's, like, oh, insert shot of Guile driving. And It's like, yeah, he didn't show up. And so they're like, well, fuck, I guess we can, I guess the scene now relies on you guys fighting the security guard. It's no longer kind of like the driving scene. It's the, or, you know, that's just one example, but I knew exactly what you're talking about. It's fucked up.
That's really interesting because it feels like Guile is supposed to be the main character, it also feels like he's barely in the movie. It really does make a lot of sense.
And the optimistic read would be, well, no, look, Mark, this isn't the Mario Brothers. This is Street Fighter 2. There's a cast of characters, but also... I read right now from the director saying, no, we needed him there. He was coked out of his mind and finally going to sleep or whatever, you know, whatever was going on. Yeah.
Yeah. And I actually have a couple other notes about just,
please,
let's
please,
say
please.
The Van Damme et al.
Okay. Goddamn it.
Okay.
Yeah. All right.
I've upset everybody.
I am broken.
This is a quote from Keith Haygate, who was the first AD.
Okay.
There was one time Jean-Claude Van Damme was in the trailer and he was quite pissed. My assistant couldn't get him out. I couldn't get him out. So I had to call the producer, Chad Rosen, to get him out. Then he came out with a bottle of champagne. I told him it was against health and safety to have alcohol on set. From that point on, he hated me.
In Louisiana, this is what we do, you know?
This is American, like American cherry pie.
Mm-hmm. This comes from Champagne region of...
Illinois. Yeah, so at one point in the 90s, his coke habit was 10 grams a day and 10 grand a week. So he was operating on all levels there. The rest of the actors recall a frustrating and bemusing experience on set. Sometimes he wouldn't show up on set and a message would come through from him saying, I have to pump up my muscles. And that was that.
Come in. I gotta
pump.
I gotta do reps. It's not a movie. He's like shirtless the whole time either.
Is he shirtless at all?
He's in military gear most of the time.
He's wearing that little beret.
Yeah. Because Guile's, dare I say, defining feature, if not his American flag on the arm tattoo, which is prominent, but like it's his
big old hair,
whippy, weird, upside down hair that comes out past his face. It goes up and out.
Yeah, it's like Dragon Ball Z.
It's like, yeah, it's like impossible but, anime hair or whatever. You know? Exactly. Yeah, it's like some of the first American influenced maybe, or, you know.
Dragon
anime.
Ball Z, but more square because of the technology at the time.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. So you put the beret on him, you know.
Smart.
You do what you can. So you have that going on, that element of Van Damme. Will he show up? What do we do if he doesn't? We improvise some things. And now again, we can't ask. This is why I said this before, but this is one of the reasons you'd ask for extra time because you lost time. You know, you didn't have that day. You can't get it back because they say tough. The movie needs to come out. You have a schedule. You have post-production here. So with that, another thing, Raul Julia gets to the set and he's in Thailand where they began the film. He's worse off than they thought. When you see him looking particularly worse in some of those opening scenes, he had just had some surgery. He had stomach cancer. He wasn't doing very well. It became clear he's going to need some time to recover. So essentially, they were going to do acting, dialogue, that stuff first, while everyone rehearsed the stunts and fights. They said, hey, Mr. Stunt Coordinator, we have to do the stunts and fights first because Raul Julia needs to recover and recuperate.
Meaning the one thing we're going to cut is any rehearsal.
Essentially, yes, exactly right.
Jesus Christ.
So, yeah. So stunt coordinator Charlie Picerni, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, Charlie Picerni, he ended up being the full-blown second unit director because he was doing so much shooting where he was the stunt coordinator, but he ended up helming the entire second unit to the point in this article, there's even discrepancies. You know, you get these movie oral histories, people can't agree on things sometimes.
Sure.
They can't really agree on who helmed the final fight between Guile and Bison. Both guys say they kind of directed it. Like, it's like that. It's a little bit...
Directly conflicting accounts?
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So, yeah, here's a ramshackle story I love. Byron Mann played Ryu, or, you know, whatever. I've heard about it. It's one of these things. A sub-anecdote is that the movie didn't really research it and just called him Ryu, and now that kind of unofficially cemented it as canon to a lot of people that were like, oh, Ryu, they said Ryu in the movie. I think it was always supposed to be Ryu, but here we are.
Anyways. Capcom might have corrected him, no?
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. That's a good point. Why wouldn't they? They were not shy about anything, right? So, regardless. So, Ryu's talking about, he has a fight with Vega, Byron Mann, who plays Ryu. He says, quote, "If you look in the movie, it's written in the script that I do this incredible kata, a theatrical sword movement, right before I fight Vega in the cage. At the time, Benny Urquidez was our trainer. Every day I'd go to Benny, I'd ask if he could teach me this kata. Every day he'd say, let's think about it. Turns out he didn't do swords either. He's a fighter. A month later, we're filming in the morning, and I hear through the grapevine that my sword scene is coming up after lunch. I was literally an hour away from filming this thing. I was shitting bricks. I grabbed a Thai extra. I'd heard he knew sword fighting." I'm going to repeat that part. "I grabbed a Thai extra. I'd heard he knew sword fighting. He taught me the move in about an hour."
Good gravy.
And then when you watch him right before he fights Vega, he takes his sword. It's not... it's like half a move. He just kind of flails his sword. You know, it's like if I told you to play sword, you could do a, you know, halfway convincing thing or something. It looks like he learned it now. You know when
people try to fake tap dancing?
Yeah. You just make noise with the shoes and it's like, that's at least a 5 out of 10 if that's all I'm going for, right? Okay, good. Like that's, I just feel like there's probably a lot of stories like that.
That's incredible. Yeah. Did you come across, or do you have a note at all about, it sounds like there was rumblings of some sort of coup in Thailand at the time?
No. Yeah. Like, not external of the movie production. You're saying Thailand issues.
Yeah, just like in just general, added to the general stress of filming there.
Of course it did. Yeah. No,
A bunch of the cast got sick from the local food. These are all... Just things that it really just doesn't seem like a very fun movie to have worked on.
No, the location stuff can be maybe sometimes that's like the vacation, but sometimes it's like local strife and cuisine and travel and bugs, weather, whatever the fuck, yeah.
Jiminy Crickets.
Yeah. Oh, another fun thing, when I was talking about, like, when we were saying how, like, the movie cut that line of dialogue that would have at least have maybe explained, it wouldn't have fixed the movie, but it would have been an attempt. Picerni, the stunt coordinator, now promoted second unit director, he's sending in his stuff, these fight scenes, Steven DeSouza's getting them, and the signature moves from the video games aren't in there, because Charlie Picerni's like this old school stunt man, I've been driving cars and Starsky and Hutch and stuff, I've been in everything. He's like, nah, man, we're doing fights here. And like, it's just, there's no like, he's looking at the scenes 2 days later because it's dailies on film and stuff like that. And you can't reshoot any of it. So one thing, you know, you might say, well, they do the signature moves. Like, one or two, maybe by the end. Guile does like an upside down, his kind of go upside down jump kick thing.
And it looks weird. It looks like when they have Yoda flying around.
Yeah, doing it doesn't martial look, arts. Yeah, it's a little odd.
Yeah.
I like that M. Bison has like rocket shoes, so he kind of flies two fists forward across what would be the screen in the video game, stuff like that. But yeah, it's slim pickings if you're trying to play Easter egg hunt.
He's not in this. Oh, I walked him. He's out of here.
Tell me how it turns out. All right, guys.
Just me and the dogs.
Have fun in here. Okay.
Let's talk about Spice World again.
I come back here talking about Spice World.
That makes sense though. That, well, okay, so a stunt coordinator becoming the second unit director.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So just filming whole.
That's not
little scenes, and yeah.
That's uncommon.
I think it's uncommon. I think it's on account of, you know. These scenes aren't rehearsed, but can you at least be the ringleader while we're filming the scenes that we should have rehearsed so you can, you know, have a handle on it? And then I don't know if meanwhile Souza is trying to film what he can or what, but it just sounds like not one part of this movie went well for one person.
Pretty weird. Pretty weird.
Can I tell you a statistic that this always amuses me? And I don't know. I've heard things like this. I don't know what this means exactly, but the thing, again, these are from the people's accounts that were there. They say after 3 weeks of filming, they were 15 days behind. Now, isn't that...
What?
Doesn't that kind of mean you accomplished nothing?
Wow. That's impressive.
Maybe you got other stuff instead.
You know, you hear that old adage for directors, one for them, one for me.
Yeah.
He said that every day.
You just can't... Yeah. 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 And so they shut down the Bangkok portion of the shoot earlier than expected, and they moved things to Australia, where at least Kylie Minogue got to, you know... go to the fast food places she liked or whatever. I don't know. I don't fucking know.
Good for her. Very good.
Oh, we also didn't mention Guile and Cammy's torrid love affair on the set. You know, it's a tale as old as time when the movie star's away.
I do. There is a funny tidbit that he admitted to it. He made a very unfortunate crack about Thailand and being familiar with the area. You can Google it if you want. But so he had that interview with The Guardian, I believe. And then a few years later, when they asked him about that affair with Kylie Minogue, he was like, ah, who told you that? He didn't remember that he already told them. This is just a couple years after.
This is, you know.
He's a weird guy.
He's a weird guy that may have taken, you know, you take some blows. I don't know if it hurts.
Hey, he's sober now. Like, and he's maybe taking some bumps.
Congratulations to anybody on their sobriety. Congratulations to anybody that can come from, like, the 10 grand a week, you know, when, like, you know, you had that in the mix. I mean, not to trivialize things, but just, like, that just, yeah, it's tremendous. Good for him. Glad he's still, can I say one?
Yeah.
Glad he's still alive and kicking.
Oh, my God. He sure is.
The more I'm talking about all this and lining them up and saying them in sort of a linear order, it's like, you know, and not to be mean at all, but the trials and tribulations of Steven D'Souza directing his first feature after a decade of absolutely just murdering the fucking screenwriting game, it's like comically, like it's a comic mishap. Like it could almost be a funny movie of like, how much worse could this go? Like you have like the cokehead guy lead, your cokehead movie star is not coming to the set, maybe because he's in there with the Australian pop star cheating on his wife, maybe because he's doing a mountain of cocaine. We don't know.
But he might just be in there lifting the weight over.
It's looking like another scene, another day where we write the security guard into the movie. You know, that's happening, whatever else. And then can I tell you another one? So
please.
He didn't get the approved reshoots from Capcom because it would mess with, they want the holiday movie. So they said, you can't do that. One thing they said that they did do, though, is that they had forged a partnership Capcom had with Hasbro to warp the G.I. Joe toy line into Street Fighter the movie dolls. G.I. Joe was having kind of a lull, so they were going to put out Chun-Li and Guile and Ryu G.I. Joes. I remember having some of them. D'Souza said later, quote, you can look at this movie as the first G.I. Joe movie. This is my favorite part, because G.I. Joe was in a swamp at this time. It was not selling. So Hasbro wanted to reboot the G.I. Joe line by thinly disguising it as Street Fighter. I lied. This is my favorite part. The request would impact the look and feel of the film. In a Hasbro memo from August 1993, plans are made for a tank driven by Jean-Claude Van Damme in the film to be designed after a current G.I. Joe vehicle, streamlining the resale process.
Good gravy.
So they're like, hey, you need to put Van Damme in this tank that we can respray our old G.I. Joe tanks to look like and sell as Street Fighter toys.
It's all just to sell toys.
I mean, down to like the
every
literal
movie.
Like, yeah, yeah.
Batman.
It's Happy Meals.
Spice World.
You know what I was thinking about? Let's circle back on Batman Returns. Could you imagine a movie's Happy Meal trajectory fucking it up in 2023?
That's crazy.
That seems crazy, right? That wouldn't happen anymore. Did Happy Meals, did they fumble their bag a little bit? They really used to have some sway in this town. I don't know. Yeah, but like, I was just thinking about that. That's too funny. I might have combined those events. It might not have happened like that, but just to be like, can I have some more time? No. Will you put this in the movie? You know, like, if that's not what happened, that's like kind of what happened. And that would be how you'd write it so that it would be more condensed.
Sure.
Snappier that way. One thing though, Capcom, they were so displeased with the Vega and Ryu fight scene, they did ask them to reshoot that. So it looked like, this part is mind-blowing to me. They wanted it to look more like the video game, which is, we're so far past that point of one fight scene. And I did appreciate, again, it sounds like at one point there were going to be more of the moves. I liked seeing some of them. There's a few things where there's like, I think like art on the wall that makes it look like E. Honda's level Easter eggs, you know? And so the fact that Vega has a mask and claws and is fighting in front of like a chain link fence thing, it's like, all right, it's close, but I don't know. Reshooting it to look more like the game, who gives a fuck at that point?
Because at this point, they're also trying to maintain a PG-13 rating.
Yeah.
And so, at one point, a fight scene ends with what's supposed to be a fatal blow, and it is not apparent from... You don't see anything on screen that makes you think that somebody just bit it.
It looks
based
like
on that move.
They maybe got their wind knocked out of them, maybe.
Yeah.
But it is meant to be fatal.
And I just wonder, like, who do you want to see this movie?
Well,
you're not going to make new Street Fighter fans.
Can I tell you real quick about the saga of the rating of this picture?
Sure.
So again, this at the end, this gets tricky. I'm just quoting the director. There's a part at the end I doubt a little bit. Anyways, okay. The film initially received an R rating, which when they first sent it away, which DeSouza was surprised. He blamed it on there were some shootings in the real life at the time, so he blamed it on it was in one of those moments of increased sensitivity to violence in the media, so your kung fu movie or whatever with gunplay too and
getting
shit like that.
Getting over-scrutinized, sure.
Yeah. It's hardly an R-rated movie though, right? I think we can agree. But he thought he was shooting a PG-13 movie. So, you know, when they were like, you have to cut some stuff out, he was like, oh, shit, you know, because I wrote Die Hard. I wrote Commando. I thought I was doing the reined-in version. No, there's no F-bombs. There's not people getting shot in the head, you know. So this also, they started trimming things, and it was down to, like, shots within a fight where a guy had a bloody nose. So that's why the fights feel so fucking weird. And sometimes...
What do you mean?
Like, when they're trimming stuff to get a better rating,
yeah.
Sometimes it's even like, if this fight is 30 seconds long, we're going to take out this shot in the middle where you see the guy's got a bloody nose.
Ah.
So that's why some of those fight scenes are also just like, wait, what? Or, you know, like...
Yeah. My other major complaint about the movie is it's not very, like... You have no sense of where you are spatially.
Yeah,
like we the audience, like I don't know what is happening right now. It's just like, oh my god,
our dog is being possessed. I think if you'll excuse us.
Yeah.
No, he's okay. He's okay.
He loves Street Fighter, so he's pretty upset right now. But just, you know, like if you watch John Wick or something, like I never lose sense of what's going on or where the camera is.
Where are all these guys in relation to all these guys?
Yeah.
Or whatever. Yeah. Where's the
And. So that's always a bummer.
There's no cohesion in the fights and stuff like that. It's also why even more of the special moves got removed, is what I hear from the editor.
Too violent?
Too violent. You know, it's almost like the last thing that happened, maybe one of the last things that happened during this production was like, it just got overrated, not in the way like, you know, it got over-scrutinized, we'll say, by the ratings board, which is really unfair. So, this is the part I wonder about. DeSouza says, the MPAA, the Motion Picture Association of America, took it down to a G. He says they gave it a G rating.
There's no way.
There's no way. I think he's exaggerating. Maybe it's PG and he's salty or something. Because, they do Clockwork Orange to Blanca. They show some fucked up stuff there. It is explode. Like, it would have gotten PG.
There's no way.
Yeah. So I choose to believe he's misremembering it or exaggerating, but I do believe this rest of the story. They took it down. It actually got a G after the cut. So the studio added a curse word in post to get PG-13. And there's a scene where they're like approaching the thing. Van Damme says, I'm too old for this shit.
So the ball crack wasn't enough to get it from a G?
Yeah.
You can make a joke about somebody forgetting their balls.
Oh, there's a hand job joke too.
Yeah, there is.
Two of them are in a thing.
Two of the good guys are locked up and like in chained to a wall, being held prisoner.
Mm-hmm.
And there's
a Honda says to Balrog, "Hey, can you give me a hand?" And he's like, "We haven't been in here that long."
Yeah,
or something.
We haven't been here a couple hours. Ask me again in a couple days or something. Like, whoa, that's it's a joke.
Pull out my Street Fighter bingo
it's
card.
It's delivered as a joke, but it was
jack off joke.
It was unexpected. Yeah. Oh, speaking of lines, though, in the movie, Raul Julia has, of course, he would get the best line because everything he says is the best thing in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
But he gives Chun-Li's character, who the actress...
Ming-Na Wen?
Yeah, Ming-Na Wen, who has gone on to be in a shitload of Marvel and Star Wars things. She also... Not long after this was the voice of Mulan, and I keyed into that very quickly. It's obvious based on the way she sounds, because she sounds exactly like Mulan.
And it was just a year or two after this, right? So she's like,
not long, couple years. But so at one point, her character confronts Bison and gives a long speech about how you destroyed my village and all that, and. You shaped the course of my life, and now here I am to seek my revenge or whatever. And he says, for you, the day Bison graced your village was the most important of your life. But for me, it was Tuesday.
Mm.
And that's fucking objectively awesome.
That's ice cold. Good line.
That's cooler
good
than anything Thanos ever said. It's like that.
I think so. Yeah. And also, it would just completely fit like any villain, Darth Vader or anything. If anything, it might be like, well, that was too cold for Darth Vader. He would never be that slick with it, you know?
That was smooth. Yeah, like, I'm sure we'll drop in a clip of that at some point during the episode, because it's wow.
Yeah.
The day Bison graced your village was the most important day of your life. But for me, it was Tuesday.
Can I run through some odds and ends here?
Yeah.
I saw this movie once, but I was always vague. I was always pretty aware of it, so I remembered some of the stuff, the action, Raul Julia, Van Damme, just the oddness of it all. One thing I never knew was that it had a theme song. Or like, well, it's not the theme song.
It's not called
an official song or whatever by Hammer. No longer MC Hammer, the darker, more mature, the more brooding, I believe, Hammer. Featuring NFL defensive back Deion Sanders in a musical, not athletic capacity.
That's so weird.
I always knew they were buddies, and I guess it's just like maybe he tried to get him in and this was the crack, and I don't think it took, you know. But it's an inexplicable song called Straight to My Feet. And they say that about, I told this to you because I was, hey, look, we're talking about our ages and what you were lined up for. I had the Hammer tapes. Okay. Well, just the one with You Can't Touch Us on it. But like, you realize he was technically a rapper, but like MC Hammer songs are like 1 minute of the chorus. And then he like says a few things and then it just either You Can't Touch This or Straight to My Feet, just like over and over.
Mm-hmm.
We were wondering what Straight to My Feet is even all about.
In the context of Street Fighter, might that imply that you got knocked on your ass?
I think so. So maybe it's meant as one of those like,
oh, I get knocked down, but I get up again?
You ain't never going to keep me down. It's one of those.
It's that?
It's one of those.
Because otherwise, I don't know what the fuck that means. Straight to my feet.
It's almost like some wholesome like Will Smith song, rap song about fucking waking up in the morning or something. That's what it sounds like, right?
I'm a straight morning person. Straight to my feet.
Yeah. I brush my teeth. Just going through the motions. Yeah.
I don't know. Inexplicable. Like everything else, it's the perfect choice for an official song because it's equally inexplicable. Down to the fucking Deion Sanders feature. What is happening?
MC Hammer. I'm sorry. Hammer. I'm glad you were talking about how it's a perfectly inexplicable thing because we're not even done. Perhaps the most inexplicable part of this movie based on a video game is the video game.
I hinted at a little bit with our intro.
Yeah, if I played this, it was only ever quickly out of a morbid curiosity, but what's amazing, so like, one thing that's interesting about Street Fighter 2 is, I think it came out before Mortal Kombat, I'm fairly certain, but like, as a kid, those were the two. Those were the Coke and Pepsi, whatever you want to call it. Mortal Kombat and Street Fighter were the two big fighting games. A lot of similarities, drastically different art styles, 2D sprites versus that digitized rendering. And I remember the first time seeing Mortal Kombat in an arcade, you talk about, whoa, there's the fucking real actors in this game I can control. It felt like it looked as good as a movie back then. I don't know why, because you look at it now and it's not a movie, but back then it looked like a VHS tape.
Sure.
I guess when it became time to talk about what else to do or what to, you know, they decided Street Fighter maybe wanted in on the Mortal Kombat style action, and they were like, we got Van Damme, so they did motion capture recording, and so there's Street Fighter, the movie, the game. They turned it back. It's like a copy of a copy of a copy.
That is the actual title, by the way.
Yeah, it's ungodly. It's the game is ugly and weird and just, it's so weird, you know. Everything's going to have trends that people jump on. Street Fighter jumped on the Mortal Kombat trend. It's bizarre. It's inexplicable.
It's very confusing. And it inspired a hard drive article of yours.
Yeah, thank you. I don't know if I've said it. I've hinted the other day on the show. I was like, I was writing for Duke Nukem for work the other day. And I wonder if that was odd if anyone doesn't know. But I do, I write for the website Hard Drive, the video game satire site that I helped start and I work for it. So yeah, and thank you for reminding me. One of the very first articles, when we were still figuring out what Hard Drive is and could be, we learned lessons like maybe don't write jokes about old Sega Saturn games when there's jokes about Grand Theft Auto 6 or whatever right there, you know, if you're looking for, I don't know, an audience.
Hey.
But, okay. Yeah, I think what, God, I should have had this ready, but it was like, gosh. So, August 16th, 2017.
Almost 6 years ago,
yeah. Street Fighter, the movie, the game, to be adapted into film. So, okay, that's pretty solid.
All
so.
Right, that's pretty good.
And then the always incredible Jeremy Kaplowitz, editor-in-chief, made a really nice piece of art there about, like it's like when, like, Marvel or Star Wars or whatever makes their announcement of their roadmap of this and then that. It's going to turn into this, will be this.
Oh,
so, yeah,
that's really funny.
It goes all the way up down into the movie, the game, the movie. Yeah, so just, yeah, you know.
And it had a, as we've talked about, it didn't have a great critical reception.
Nope.
The New York Times called it a dreary, overstuffed hodgepodge of poorly edited martial arts sequences and often unintelligible dialogue. And I have to think that that last bit about the unintelligible dialogue was directed at Mr. Van Damme.
I heard what M. Bison was saying.
I heard every word, yeah.
I was hanging on every word.
If there was a supercut of just his parts, I think that would be the ideal way to view this movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Ming-Na Wen, who played Chun-Li, she said she was a little concerned when she saw the film. She had studied at Carnegie Mellon. She was a serious Shakespeare theater person. And she, while she can look back with fond memories now, there was some cringeworthy moments at the time, which I can imagine.
Yeah, it's a big cheesy movie.
And she's perfectly serviceable in the movie, by the way.
Yeah, yeah.
Chun-Li's like objectively the coolest
kind of has character. Close to the most to do. Up there with a lot of, you know, definitely, yeah, the most to do, does it well, yeah. Kicks a lot of ass. Yeah,
yeah,
for sure.
I have a quote from her from an interview with The Guardian. She says, "At the time, I was shooting ER, and I remember saying to George Clooney, 'Oh gosh, I think my career might be over.' He said, 'Oh honey, it takes a lot to kill a career. I should know.'"
Wonderful.
And I thought that was really funny because he would go on to play Batman in arguably the worst Batman movie.
Mm-hmm.
What is regarded as the worst Batman movie. And what's funny is that this conversation must have taken place years before that happened.
Because he left ER to be a movie star. And that's when he's like, I'm a movie star. I'm Batman now. That's incredible. And
so funny.
And it famously didn't kill his career.
Right.
He'd been very... he will joke about it and acknowledge it, and it's not just like a sweep it under the rug thing. He's just like, yeah, I tried it, it sucked. What do you do? I don't know. I appreciate that. I always have.
And look at, she's had, what did you say, 100 and something episodes of that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. show?
Yeah, she was all over Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
She was on the Book of Boba Fett and The Mandalorian. She got to reprise her role as Mulan in the fucking Wreck-It Ralph sequel.
Yeah.
And I think I saw that she had a small cameo, probably like a nudge-nudge part in the live-action remake of Mulan.
Ah, fun. That's fun. So fun and tasteful. Yeah.
Chun-Li got to go on to be a... canonically, Chun-Li and Mulan are like the same person, so...
Not bad.
Maybe not canonically, but...
Sure, yeah.
That's how I'm going to perceive it from now on. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Chun-Li, in the odds and ends, there's been some animated stuff that I full-blown am just not aware of. Or, I mean, like, you know... On a detailed level, we'll say. There was a live action, a Street Fighter movie in 2009 where they tried to call their shot and the Legend of Chun-Li, and it tanked. And they tried to get some cameos, didn't work out.
They tried to get Van Damme back as Guile. He said no, right?
Didn't want to do it.
Yeah.
Which, interesting, I'm not sure the exact time on this, 2009, but at some point he returned to the Universal Soldier franchise. So maybe if they just called, if they waited, if the timing was different, they might have got him. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Might have been a money thing. Who knows? But
And there's a recent development, right?
It was recently announced a new movie is coming. Not that much more is known. It's by Legendary Pictures. They did like King Kong, Skull Island, the... what's the Netflix thing? Holmes, Sherlock Holmes, but it's...
Enola Holmes.
Enola Holmes, thank you. So, some other things too, I forget, but you know, some stuff, they do stuff, so they're looking like they're going to do Street Fighter, and I don't doubt it because we are now, it's funny, you know, like I mentioned, this was Mario, Mortal Kombat, this was part of the wave of movies that cemented video games as having bad reputations forever. They didn't stop making them, but maybe less got made than would have. There's been a slow trickle ever since, kind of.
Sort of like every time they try to remake Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
And nobody ever likes it.
Yeah.
There's a fly in here.
Yeah, sorry, I didn't want to, I thought I could kill it. I'm not going to keep doing it. So, you know, it's going to be different this time around. They'll probably figure out a way to make it halfway decent, and it'll make $2 billion internationally. And, you know, but you know what's really interesting, and this is a very probably obvious joke that's been pointed out, but this movie wasn't very well received. I think if I'm Steven DeSouza, I would go back to Capcom or whoever and just go, guys, you got to let me make Street Fighter 2. That's the money, right?
Yeah.
The game was always Street Fighter 2. So we should have spent $4 million on this movie, got it on a technicality, and said, guys, Street Fighter 2, here it is. They blew it. They should call this new one, just call that Street Fighter 2.
That would be
fucking brilliant.
Yeah.
Because it has all the same people anyways. He's like, yeah, Street Fighter 2, Ryu and Ken and Guile are all here, you know?
Get some wrestlers in there. Yeah. Kenny Omega and all the other ones that are noted Street Fighter fans.
That's right. That's right. Start pairing them off. Who could play who? All that stuff. Not pairing them off, but, you know, yeah, pairing people with parts.
They might even be able to save some money on stunt people because, like, Chris Statlander, who's a current champion in AEW, she used to be a stunt woman.
There you go. There you go. There's a world where the Street Fighter movie is pretty rad, I think, the new one, you know? We don't know anything about it. We don't know anything about it yet.
No,
so a lot could happen.
There's nothing to know, I don't think.
Just that it's going to maybe happen. Even them saying it's going to happen, there's no guarantee. People talk a lot of shit.
We'll see.
Yeah. So winding down here before this fly drives us mad in a Breaking Bad style fit of whatever. I just wanted to mention all this emphasis on the release date, right?
Mm-hmm.
The movie comes out, they get fucking third place.
No.
To Dumb and Dumber and the Santa Claus in its seventh week, which...
Oh, my God.
Granted, it's now the... Maybe it got a Christmas boom, whatever. But so just $33 million domestically. As we mentioned before, 100 internationally. So technically a modest success. But, like, I don't know. If they waited and made it a movie for next summer and made it just, like, kick ass, who knows, right? They could have done a franchise or something. But their little release date was so... Someone had the idea that Christmas 94 is the secret to our success.
Well, and it's not... It's not very good.
You don't think it was salvageable with a month?
It got bad reviews, and, you know, now it seems like there's a certain reverence. I don't know if it's nostalgia or just the general consensus seems to be this movie is terrible, but it's so bad it's enjoyable.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd say that, like, largely public favor has turned around for it, but objectively it's. It's not good.
It's tough. It's one of those things where I enjoyed it. I don't regret watching it. I would, in a couple years, if it's on TV, I wouldn't dislike watching it again. There's an appeal to it. It's fun. Because there's so much going on, it does move. Even if it doesn't make sense, it tends to bounce around and something else is always about to happen if you're bored.
And again, Raul Julia.
He's always around the corner and just, bizarre things and whatever else. But yeah, but it's tough because it's also like if I were to have to give it like some letter grade or stars, like, oh, I can't really, I mean, it's all arbitrary, but just saying like, yeah, like it's not good. It's not good, but it's fun. It's junk food, you know?
Sure.
I think there's some quotes here that I pulled. I'm sorry.
Hey, sometimes you're in the mood for junk food.
Exactly right. Yeah. You know, like, do you want drive through? I do sometimes, right?
Yeah.
So I just pulled some quotes that I think summed it up well and also made a point that I think we've talked about before, that sometimes a bad movie, it brings out critics trying to really show off, right?
Oh, God. Yeah.
Because... You only get, you know, a movie is a lot of work. It's a 90-minute deal. But it's like you only get this essay, these paragraphs to do it. So
look at how clever I am.
Right. So some of these I just agree with. And some of these, like this first one I liked a lot. And also, surprisingly, when you comb through the reviews, not enough mentioned the Van Damme voice accent thing. Shockingly few are like, oh, by the way, the main character is off-putting every time he speaks. Like, you know, that doesn't get... harped on enough, but Matt Brunson from Film Frenzy put it well. There's not much that's worthwhile in this endless cacophony of gunfire, explosions, grunts, yelps, maniacal laughter, and Jean-Claude Van Damme's tortured syntax.
Tortured syntax. That's
that
great.
I liked. I don't. I think there's plenty worthwhile, but I liked that. And then here's one I was talking about. Keep an eye on me. Tell me if I say this last word right. Street Fighter doesn't exactly scream quality entertainment, says James Crute from Stuff of New Zealand. However, there is just something stylishly bad about the whole Farrago. Farrago.
I have never seen that word in my life.
I
would guess Farrago.
Farrago. Okay.
But again, I'm guessing.
Someone's like, "Oh, Street Fighter, time to bust out the F-bomb," and I don't mean fuck, you know. So now, will you do me a favor and read the last one? This is from Tim Brayton, a publication called Alternate Ending.
Okay. Raul Julia is the reason that this is a memorable triumph of a campy, kitschy, ironically lovable cinema, and not just an unlikable, boring Farrago of an action movie. What the fuck? Again?
I was shocked. I had to put this in here. Farrago.
Okay, I'm Googling it right now. A confused mixture. Confused mixture.
Farrago.
Hodgepodge. Just say hodgepodge. New York Times used hodgepodge.
No, they all said Farrago.
Mishmash.
Farrago.
Farrago. Okay, we're going to
Fargo.
Yeah. Farrago.
Farrago.
Okay. I was putting a little pinky up on
Farrago. Anybody?
I'm just hungry for one of those Ferrero Rochers.
I want a Faygo.
I can't believe that. What are the odds? Everybody got their thesaurus that day.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really... the same, the word of the day calendar that all the movie critics got in their stockings had a Farrago on it.
It's so funny. But I found what I thought might make a great final thought from De Souza himself, sort of just encapsulates where he stands on it, where how he looks back on it. Mm-hmm. He does fondly.
Okay, good. That's always good to hear. So nice to hear.
We have now a good time to wrap her up, you think?
Yeah, absolutely. Please.
This is Jean-Claude made two films that earned $100 million, Time Cop and this one. It was extremely profitable for the studio. It cost $33 million and made $105 million, so it was good for everybody. People say it's so dim-witted it's funny, but we knew it was funny. How can you see that movie and think it's funny by accident?
Mm. I'll give you a point there, Stevie. Yeah. Like we said, there's some silly shit that like really, really pokes out once in a while, so... Yeah, I don't know.
And it's almost impressive. It's like when you watch that show Cutthroat Kitchen, and they're like, hey, we want you to make a turkey sandwich, but we're going to not give you any turkey, and we're going to take away your bread.
Yeah.
And then so they gotta use a bunch of weird shit to make the turkey sandwich, and they give it to a judge, and then the judge picks the best one. It's like, wow, considering you didn't have any of the shit
but
you needed.
But the judge doesn't even know you didn't get to use bread and turkey.
But considering, you know, it's a serviceable turkey sandwich.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, I'm surprised that they were able to make a movie out of all of the different factors they had working against them here.
It could, it's like, you're right. It's messy, but it could have been messier. So maybe it's a glasses half full, half empty kind of test movie.
A action star that's going through all of the trials and tribulations of somebody, with the trappings of fame and all of that. Yeah. A terminally ill, it's a terminal illness that they're dealing with. That's a tumultuous overseas set and
pushy Capcom executives that are like, use this, put these 15 characters in, put this tank in, put the thing
on top of the time restraints and yeah.
Oh, one more thought I wanted to say too, and you just reminded me of it, and this comes back to like my initial reaction, and I maintain that this was like, as a kid I just was just like, I don't know what to feel, I'm very just like, that just made me feel weird and I'm put off. It's because I was a tremendous fan of Street Fighter and I was a tremendous fan of Van Damme. Mm. And the movie feels like neither, because it doesn't feel like what you'd picture a Street Fighter movie, and it doesn't feel like the new Van Damme movie, which I might have been okay with. Like, oh, he just hijacked it, and it's just, everyone are his buddies, he's going to fight M. Bison, it's not a fair thing, but it feels like it's Van Damme kicking ass. But he wasn't even there half the time, it sounds like.
Because he wasn't around for his shooting days. So,
it's
crazy.
Like, it's such an awful thing of like, this thing that you guys spent most of your money on, fucking shot the thing in the foot a little bit, but... Nevertheless. Oh, also, too, there is a something that devastated me as a kid. Less in this movie as it was in the my beloved Masters of the Universe from the late 80s with Dolph Lundgren. But, you know, these days, they put a thing at the end of the credits all the time, right? It wouldn't happen that often. And they do it sometimes, like Ferris Bueller had one in the 80s. There's not that many, though, right? There's one where Skeletor says he's coming back. And this one, Raul Julia makes it sound like, you know, M. Bison's coming back or whatever.
Yeah, it's like the Bison... His system comes back online.
Yeah.
It's does his hand break through hand some break through rubble?
The rubble, I think, or something. Yeah. And it's just, they would just do these on spec, you know? And as a kid, for me, it was Masters of the Universe. Maybe some kids had this. There's like any piece of shit movie, like I'm saying this about, because I like piece of shit movies too. There's probably some people that grew up loving Street Fighter and just going, cool, there's going to be a sequel one day. That was me with Masters of the Universe. Because
that was me with Freddy vs. Jason.
Yeah. Because Freddy winks. He's carrying, yeah. So you just like take it on that alone. Like the movie told me there's going to be more, and then it just never happens.
Yep.
Never happens.
Not yet.
Street Fighter 2. If they call that movie Street Fighter 2, that would just be a home run.
That means they're listening.
Oh, yeah, that too.
Perfect.
Thanks for subscribing, Legendary Pictures.
Thank you guys so much for tuning in to our 9th episode.
Yeah, we're excited. Double digits coming up. We're having a blast. I hope everyone's having a good time listening.
All right. Well, cool.
Very cool.
So, for you, listening to the very end of a podcast episode was the most memorable experience of your life. But for us, it was Tuesday.
$20 billion, what will prevent him from taking more hostages next month and asking for $50 billion, $100 billion?
Colonel, have you lost your mind?
No. You've lost your balls.